VOCM presents Nightline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. And now your host, Jonathan Richler.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning into the program. It is the 25th of September, 2017. It is also Monday, therefore. Well, not therefore, but just because tomorrow is the municipal elections all across the province of Newfoundland and Labrador. We will be holding our fourth and final September Municipal Mondays. In studio, CEO of Municipalities Newfoundland and Labrador, Mr. Craig Pollitt, fresh off the plane from British Columbia. How are you, sir?
I'm excellent. I'm still on BC time, so I'm wired right now.
What time is it for you? It's
What time is it now?
Three.
And it's 3:30 for me.
3:30. Yeah. Wow. So Days of Our Lives just finished.
I had lunch a little while ago. I'm looking forward to supper. Yep.
Huh. What's for supper?
I don't know. In my mind or in the real world?
In the real world, I suppose, folks, if you're interested in telling us what's for supper, call in. We are, of course, taking tweets at VOCM Nightline. We're using the hashtag Municipal Election NL 2017. You can use whatever hashtag you want. I'm going to ask, here's a hashtag I'd like to start with, question mark. I'm hearing that the mayor of the city of St. John's is now saying that we should have online voting.
Yeah.
Why now?
I don't know. You should ask him that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it could just be that he's thinking about, you know, what the next generation needs to do, and maybe this is a good idea. It's something that M&L looked at a few years ago. Mm-hmm. We had a resolution, I think from Mount Pearl, if memory serves. Someone from Mount Pearl can call and tell me I'm wrong. Saying that we should be looking at online voting for municipal elections. Happens in lots of places. There's definitely challenges with it. There's security issues, all that jazz. Mm-hmm. But as that technology improves and encryption
okay.
Technology improves, it's more likely that at some point someone's going to want to do it. And the issue we have right now is even if a municipality wanted to try this out, they're not allowed. That's the Municipal Elections Act forbids them from doing it that way. So
fascinating.
We'd have to get a change in legislation to allow someone to pilot it or something like that.
That would require a great deal of lobbying on the part of mayors and municipalities to force the Department of Municipal Affairs to get that done.
Yep.
There are a lot of individuals campaigning on relations with the province and trying to change things that they have no jurisdiction over.
It
truly
it's funny.
Changes.
And I think a lot of that comes from what they hear from residents when they're doing their campaigning. Because lots of times what I hear from municipal candidates is, you know, people are interested in this issue, that issue, whatever. And a lot of these issues are ones that are outside municipal jurisdiction. So the act in our province, our act is very prescriptive. It basically says here's the dozen things you're allowed to do as a town or a city. And you're not allowed to do anything that's not written in that act, right? So it's not like it says you got to do these things, but you can do other things. It says here's the things you are allowed to do. Don't even think about doing anything else. Everything else would be called what they call ultra vires, outside of your authority.
Okay.
And yet, municipalities, they're political entities. They're governing entities. And I don't think residents are too particularly concerned about whether it's within your jurisdictional capacity to do something or not. If I'm electing you to represent me in whatever capacity, I want you to act on the things that I'm concerned about. So quite often, that means not just simply changing a rule at the municipal level, it means trying to convince the provincial government to change one of their rules because your residents are asking you to make some change on this issue. It's interesting. It's a really fascinating process if you're a geek like me.
It is a fascinating process. And, of course, I immediately think of people like the mayor of the town of Wabana and the situation with the ferries.
Absolutely.
For how long he's been lobbying, seemingly spitting against the wind to get change. Even when change was agreed upon, it still took 12 months, if not longer, to have the request of his constituents even be met at the most minimal level. And Mayor Gazin, we feel your pain, buddy, and all residents of Bell Island. There are many examples that I can think of mayors who are trying to do their very best to fight for or fight against the government, to lobby for their constituents. So that's fascinating. Folks, tonight we're doing our best to veer off from hearing from the candidates who will tell us how many signs they have out or how many doors they've knocked on or what the resume entails. I'd like to hear from you. I want to know what you want your counselors to do when and if they get elected, because now's the time. Now is the time, and I hope that most of you will get to the polls. We generally have a pretty poor turnout in terms of municipal elections. Less than 50% is where we stand. Hopefully tomorrow we'll wake up to a day where everyone feels that it's a wonderful day to go out and make your mark. And if you live in the mail-in ballot capital of North America, St. John's, no doubt you've already sent in your ballot and you're waiting for the results, which start tomorrow night right here on VOCM Nightline with the entire VOCM news team guided by news director Linda Swain. I'll just be sitting in the background probably, taking it all in like the nerd that I am. We're going to start the show, Craig, with Dave, who's calling in from Stephenville Crossing. Hello, Dave.
Good evening, Jonathan, Craig. And I listen to Open Nightline all the time, especially now Monday nights when Craig is on there.
Thank you.
And, you know, you and Craig are talking about, you know, people should run for council. But I tell you, out here in Stephenville Crossing this year, the seven old councillors are running, and we got one new one, and they're doing everything in their power to stop this man from running. It's unbelievable. Like, I got no back doors. I am campaigning for Mr. Cliff Goodyear, and we even had to call the RCMP in because they were breaking down our signs. And then I got accused by one of the councillors that I was breaking down their signs, but I don't pay much attention to that, right? I'm not that common fuller. Okay. And even, like, some of the councillors, like our MHA, Scott Reed, got phone calls that we were using these signs with his name on it. Like, I can't campaign for Scott in the last election. I picked up old signs, put them back to back, and put on it, vote for Mr. Cliff Goodyear, right? And I had signs belonging to Judy Foote where I campaigned for Kevin Aylward. We used those signs year after year, back to back, and nobody's name in the front. And they even wrote the premier, the councillor, but Scott don't want to get involved and tell who what names they are.
So Dave, there's
a lot of horse, right?
Just to clarify that statement, you're recycling old election signs by putting them backwards and writing a candidate's name on the other side?
Yeah, you're allowed to do that.
That's a great idea.
Sure is a great idea.
I don't know if it's legal.
There's nothing wrong with it, because even Scott said, David, go ahead and do it, because, like he said, they're calling him, but they're trying to stop this candidate from running. And I'm going to tell you another story this morning. This man had to go to the office this morning. All the rest got their, you know, their papers and that, and signed by a commissioner.
Yeah.
He went there this morning because he had to get a second there, not a second there. What do you call it when they count the ballots there?
A scrutineer.
A
scrutineer, Greg, right. And so he had a scrutineer, and then the mayor here is the commissioner. He's out of town today. So this man, in order to get a scrutineer for tomorrow, he had to go to St. George and get a commissioner to sign it, right? And then he wanted to get the voters list this morning, and our town manager, which is we're having a big problem with out here, nobody could deal with her. And she said it's going to cost $300-some-odd.
And how much does it normally cost?
I'm going to tell you now. So our candidate, Mr. Goodyear, got hold of municipal affairs, and she said there's something wrong with that. So she called the town manager and said there's only a nominal fee, which is $25.
What?
Yeah, it's only $25. And she and our town manager told our candidate he would have to pay $300-some-odd to get the voters list for tomorrow.
Just stopping you right there, Dave, to ask a couple of quick questions so I can understand what you're saying. You're telling me that this candidate's, let's call him number 8, went into the town manager and asked for a voters list, and the town manager said that it would cost $350.
300 and some odd.
Okay. Why is a candidate 24 hours before election day asking for a voters list?
Because, I tell you the reason why. He could ask before, I guess, but he's tied up because I'm helping him. But the man, his wife is really sick, right? And he, you know, like I say, everyone got the right to put their name in the run for council, haven't they? Haven't they, Greg?
Yeah, well, as long as you meet the eligibility, absolutely.
He had the eligibility. Matter of fact, This man was made a mayor here before, and he was a councillor. And this man, when he was a town, when he was with mayor, he got the water and sewer for us here. Uh-huh. He got the old age home here for us. We saved our trade school one time. We're going to move it out of here. Okay. And now, our biggest problem is our town manager over there. Nobody could deal with her.
All right, so Steve Mill Crossing, approximate population of 2,000 people, right? So the voters list would be awfully small.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, what are you going to do with 2,000 names on a voters list 24 hours before Election Day? Was the intent of your candidate, number 8, to call all of these people?
I tell you what he needed for. Yeah. The one is going to be scrutineer. He just wanted the voters list to know who's I was a scrutineer for Scott Reed in the last election, mm-hmm. and you're allowed to know who's voting, right? We don't know who they're voting for, but you just ticks off the name as they come in, right?
Wow!
And that's the reason he wanted to get that today. And before I forget it, yesterday morning when we woke up, a big half a sheet of plywood on it, anyone except Cliff to vote for. Now imagine. Anyone except Cliff.
And where was this plywood, sir?
This was put down on Seal Cove and where all the rest of the signs are.
Wow, that's really...
So, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, I was going to run, but I told you before, I would have ran if we have four or more people, we would have a majority to vote most of them out. Because the same ones in there every year, and I know what's going on in this town, and it's unbelievable. Everybody you talk to, if you did a survey and asked 100 people, the town manager, not a soul could get along with her, and it's ridiculous.
Okay, so essentially you're saying a lot of bad things about your town manager.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure if I can accept that as anything but impolite, sir.
Yeah, okay, well, let that go, Neil. But anyhow,
I don't think I can let it go is exactly what I just said.
Yeah,
Dave.
But anyhow, I dealt with her myself. I'm going to tell you something now. I try to get our minutes off the council meeting where they give a permit back in 2016 to open a quarry on Old Seal Cove Road.
Right.
It was done in 2016, and our committee never found out about it till June 2017, and they never put out a public notice. And we got a stop order put on this pit by Natural Resources. So now I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of dirty work going on in this town.
Well, Dave, thank you for your call tonight. We're going to end it there because I'm not comfortable with you providing such descriptions of a town manager. Although this person does work for the public, I just don't feel comfortable continuing this. But good luck to your candidate tomorrow, and thank you for describing what appears to be an uncomfortable situation, and I wish your candidate the very best.
I'm a taxpayer. I'm allowed to speak out, ain't I?
You're allowed to speak out in an election against people who are running.
Yeah.
The town manager is not running. She's not a public figure.
Yeah.
She's not a politician or he, whatever the case may be. The town manager works for the 7 or 5 or whatever it is, councillors. They're not an independent political person. They do what they're told, essentially. So if you have complaints about the way a council is run, then you complain about the council. You can't complain about the employee who's just doing their job.
Well, I'm complaining about the council, too. Those councillors are trying to stop Mr. Goodyear from running. Like I just told you, he wrote
so
the premium.
Well, you think they are.
With respect, we've described the situation, or you have described the situation, I think, to your satisfaction, and I believe our listeners have a good idea. But we're gonna finish the conversation now, Dave, because it's just a little too... I'm not very comfortable with the way that you're describing this town manager, and civil servants are separate from councillors. So thank you. Good luck with your candidate tomorrow on Election Day, and no doubt you and I will speak again.
Yeah, thank you, and you and Craig, for your time. Thank you very much.
Good night. All right. Now, that's an important point when it comes to public officials versus civil servants.
Yeah.
And questioning character. Like that, I just don't know what the boundaries should be. And yes, if you're a taxpayer, you have every right to complain. But attacking a character of a person is something that I don't know what to say.
Especially during a municipal election, because it gives the impression that somehow this person is part of the election. And they're not. This person has to work with whoever is elected. And that's what they do. It's a tough job, especially in a lot of the smaller communities. Mm-hmm. There's probably only a single person in that office, or two or three. They handle a lot of work. They handle the brunt of complaints and angry residents who show up at the counter demanding something, and typically what they're demanding is something only the council itself can approve or can do. The person behind the desk has no power to fulfill that person's wish. So it's a tough job anyway. To be dragged into the election itself, that goes over the line, as far as I'm concerned. If your campaign to get on council is against the town manager or the town clerk or whatever, you really need to rethink whether you want to be on council or not.
It's also interesting, in my short 3 years hosting a radio program that's across the province, I've never heard from a town manager. And I believe it's because there is a wall of silence. It is the representatives, yep. The councils themselves, who represent issues and speak to them.
You got it.
So town managers, assistant managers, accountants, etc., don't have a voice necessarily.
So in this case, this is a prime example of that. Mm-hmm. The town managers or the town clerks typically are not the ones who speak on behalf of council. And if you're accused of something in the public forum like this, mm-hmm. Where's your ability to talk back, to protect your own integrity and your own reputation? Because you're not the spokesperson for council. It's the mayor or a designate who will do that. So when your name gets dragged into, or your who you are gets dragged into an election like this, it's particularly difficult for staff because they have to stay out of it. They have to stay neutral. And to come out against one candidate would be a real challenge for them.
I would open the airwaves to any of the current sitting councillors and or mayor of Stephenville Crossing to provide clarification on this particular issue. But let's look at the cost of achieving a voter's list or acquiring a voter's list. Is it $20 for all municipalities across the board? Because
it depends.
I just want to say that's a very interesting cash grab for municipalities to charge for a voter's list for scrutineers leading up to an election.
Yep.
Is it a service fee?
Yeah. It's basically it should cover the cost of what it's going to take to, you know, get that file, photocopy it, all that kind of stuff. Depends on how you, what form you want it in as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of guidelines for municipalities around access to information, right? The stuff you have to have on hand in your office, the stuff that you're allowed to charge for and not allowed to charge for, and that sort of thing. There's a big thick book that tells you what you have to have around and
okay.
that sort of thing. When the Access to Information Act was changed a few years ago, we did a ton of work with the province on new guidelines for municipalities because it flipped everything on its head for them. But in this case, who knows what goes in. Every municipality has their own policy for what they're going to charge. If it's a fairly big municipality with a lot of staff, printing off a copy of that voter's list and photocopying it may be a very simple thing.
Yeah,
for a small
names.
Municipality mm-hmm. that has it in a different format or whatever, I mean, I don't know what kind of work is involved in them getting a copy of that, right?
One might think it could be 20 pages at maximum if there's only a population of 2,000.
Do you charge the staff person's time while they're doing it and that sort of thing, right?
Excellent.
So there's a really interesting discussion, though, to be had on balancing cost recovery
mm-hmm.
versus the public's right to know and right to access and that sort of thing. So,
that's
but in this case, mm-hmm. I have no idea what the cost would have been.
And for the interest of Dave and others out in Stephenville Crossing, we'll try and get an answer as to why this document would cost $350 versus $20. And thank you, Dave, for bringing those issues to the forefront. And again, best of luck to all candidates who are running in Stephenville Crossing. We're going to go to the break. Jamie Neville is up right after this.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Hi, hello, welcome back. There we go, microphone's on. Jamie Neville, line two. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, fellas. How are you tonight?
Well, how
Excellent.
Are you?
Good. Anyway, was it instead of Christmas Eve, is election Eve? Is it?
You know, I was telling somebody earlier that the night of a municipal election or provincial election was always like a little mini Christmas party in our house when I was growing up. You sit around the TV or the radio and you wait to hear the results, and there's finger food, and it was excellent.
Oh yeah, well that's it. Everybody is all the work is done now. Everybody got to wait and see what's happening.
Yep.
Yeah.
See how their work will pay off. Anyway, boys, I'm just driving back over the highway. I just pulled over. I heard the last caller talking about the election up in Stephenville. Yep. The politics is vibing well up here, you can see. the reason why I called is that he was talking about, and you were enlightening the people about town managers and of course, the individuals that are with council, and they don't have the powers, but we elect people in communities to do a job, and they are the ones that are out there represent the people, and they give direction to those individuals that are on the workforce.
Right on.
And so the reason why I just was interested in saying that was I'm bringing up a point now, because isn't that the same way for our individuals that are elected, like our MHAs and MPs and all these individuals as well? Do they hold the same powers that a municipal councillor would hold? And I'm asking you that in all fairness.
Over staff, you mean? I'm not sure.
Yeah, like what I'm saying is that, like, and I'm reiterating an old issue that Jonathan, of course, is very well familiar with me, is the swimming pool project for Placentia. Mm-hmm. Like the premier comes out and the ministers of the day and all of them 2 years ago and announces the pool project and everything. And of course, the government changes and then you have new members in there, like Minister Eddie Joyce, and you have Minister Sherry Gammon Walsh. And they're telling our groups that, like, they're in there giving direction and telling the deputy ministers and telling the individuals in there to get this project done. But still, all in all, is not moving forward and is held up. So that's why I'm asking you, like, is it really the bureaucrats running the members, or is it vice versa? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, is it the employees of council running the show or whatever? You know, that's where you beg to answer or beg to ask some questions, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, in the best scenario, it's a partnership, right? Because the staff have information and experience and expertise that the councillors need to make good decisions. So it's the staff's job to provide good, objective advice to the council. The council has to take that advice, decide if they like it or not, and then make a decision. And then it's the staff's job to implement that decision. On a big project, when you're involving the provincial government and ministers and deputy ministers and assistant deputy ministers and directors and managers and all that kind of stuff, mainly what happens there, from my experience, and I used to work for the provincial government many, many lifetimes ago, is everything is just really, really slow. It takes a long time to get stuff done.
A lot of red tape.
And I don't always apologize for red tape. I'll put that right out on the table right now. It's a safety mechanism. Yeah. It makes sure that we don't foolishly spend money that taxpayers are giving the provincial or federal governments to use. But, you know, and I hear that all the time, that, you know, it's the staff who run the shop and all that kind of stuff. Man, I can tell you, in the case of provincial and federal ministers, when they have a strong political mandate, as federal and provincial governments do, they hold a lot of sway over what gets done. Now, the intimate details of how it gets done, you know, the weekly step-by-step process, I don't think they're involved at that level, nor more should they be. They're at a much higher level. So sometimes they got to check in to make sure things are getting done the way they thought it was going to get done. So, you know, but for the most part, I honestly believe that the bigger the system, the longer it's going to take. In a small municipality, it doesn't take that long. In larger provincial governments or departments, it takes a little longer.
It's like a drop of water finding its way from your shingle to your basement.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because I've heard that said before. You know, making change in the provincial government is like erosion. Right, it's going to happen, but it takes a long time, right?
I'm glad that you explained it that way, because which leads to my next part of this conversation is that, and this is, I tried calling in last week to give an update to the town of Placentia about the swimming pool project, because I am the chair of that project, right?
Sure, yeah.
And the thing is with it, like, a lot of people in the community have lost a lot of faith in this project because it's been being worked on so long. But the thing is with it is that being the chair of the committee, I have never lost faith in the project going forward. I'm being told at all government levels that it is moving forward. And that's why I know that, like, right now it's a bit of a lull with the election that's ongoing now. Once council gets reelected and the council gets back in or they move forward and we get the new members or whoever's going in,
yep.
at least then we start again the process of moving and pushing this forward. That's why it's nothing really moving now. And of course, you hear that out in our election. Our politics is alive and well out here in the century as well. and that's why, you know, I wanted to bring up last week, and I just took the opportunity tonight because that individual made a good point about staff and council relations. And, of course, myself being the former deputy mayor of Placentia a few years back,
yep.
I know, too, myself, like, I always looked at politicians as policy setters. And that's what I like to do. I go in with a clear decision. I know at council, when I used to sit at the council level, you know, we were directed. The only time council staff could speak at a public council meeting is if asked by a council member or the mayor.
Right on.
And then they had direction to talk. And that's the way I always liked it and preferred it, because you didn't want to influence anything at the table. But in light of that, that's the way it's supposed to work. And that's why the guy from Stephenville, I'm sure that if the town manager up there is trying to run the show or whatever, I think that municipal affairs will be after acting a little bit on that behalf anyway up there.
Well, good points tonight, Jamie. Craig had one final thought, I think, and then we're going to go to Al over in Torbay.
Yeah, just while I was wondering, just very quickly, how long have you been working on this project?
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
That's a while. But I tell you.
Too long.
but it's not, if you had said to me 15 years,
yeah.
I would have been a little bit more surprised, but I wouldn't have been shocked.
Yeah. Wow.
Just because there's...
Listen, I know it, with the 8 years, I'm saying 8 years to you. People in the community are saying 8 years, wow, it's never going to get done. But I'm telling you 8 years. I know that the project, the end is coming near.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's the way the town of Placentia has to look at it. I mean, the town of Placentia and the people, I know everybody's frustrated, but we have to look at it as the end is coming near, and we're soon going to get this project done. Yeah,
that's a lot of dusty bathing suits.
Oh, yes. There's a lot of dusty bathing. Hey, listen, mine don't even fit anymore.
All right, Jamie. Thanks for the chat tonight,
anyway,
bud. And I hope to see you do a big old fat cannonball into that brand new pool whenever it gets built, and I'll be there to see it.
It's got to happen anyway. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. And, of course, a cannonball is when you jump off of a diving board and you curl up into a ball, and that's the cannonball versus the belly flop, which is very uncomfortable. We're going to go to line number 4, speak with Al from Torbay. How are you getting on, Al?
How are you doing, John?
Good by you.
John, how are you making out? Do you see lots of dogberries around?
They're everywhere. They're maggoty with dogberries.
I don't know if we're going to have a hard winter or a good winter.
Well, I was always of the impression that if you have a lot of dogberries and the branches are heavy, that means it's bad.
Yeah,
for the winter.
I think it is, John. Yeah. Probably a cold winter, boy, and a lot of snow. And John, what I want to talk about tonight, what's wrong with the stores, John? They're going a little bit too far, I said, with the food.
Okay.
The people are just getting fed up with it.
Is this another promotional commercial for Coleman's now, Al?
No, I'm not going to mention Coleman's.
All right.
Because they're good people, see?
Yeah.
And, John, mm-hmm. this minimum wage, when is that coming up?
Well, it goes up a quarter every year, I think, which, of course, is not enough in my books.
No.
What
it
is it now?
$15.
It's $10.50.
Or $17.
Mm-hmm.
Because those people, men and women, are standing up on their legs and the whole day, and then the shifts comes on. Mm. Yeah, they should go to $17, not $15. That's right. And that.
Yeah.
I was going to go down to City Hall, but I'm not going down now, John.
Which City Hall, yours or St. John's?
No, the St. John's Depot.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going down now.
Why not?
Because I don't want to get squat up.
Who's going to squat you, Al?
Oh, you never know. It's going to be war down this morning.
you were going to go down and...
tomorrow night, I'm telling you.
You don't want to come down for the victory party.
Yeah.
For your candidate.
I want to stay clear of that place now.
Oh, okay. Al from Torbay thinks that former Mayor Andy Wells is going to be the new mayor.
I remember.
Al is highly endorses the election in another municipality.
Andy gets in. the people of St. John's would be happy.
So what about Torbay, Al? What are you looking for there?
Oh, I'm not saying nothing about Torbay because we're not getting nothing anyway.
Okay.
On Torbay. We're
right.
not getting nothing.
Not
we
getting
pay
nothing.
Taxes and like everywhere else.
But
like
what are you not getting for your taxes in Torbay, Al?
Pardon?
What are you not getting that you'd like to see? Because they're listening right now.
Well, you mean the low prices?
Yeah, what would you like your council to do on your behalf?
I tell you what I like to do. The seniors should be cut down a little bit. The people.
Cut.
The people are not walking. And retired people should be cut down.
You mean
their taxes should be lowered?
Yes, a little lower.
I see.
Because they're going too far with it now. Yeah.
Because I know most municipalities have discounts for seniors on their taxes.
Yes, what's that? That's no good, Jonathan. Allows you all $200 or $300. And then you got to phone away, then try to... yeah, that's not right. Senior citizens shouldn't have to pay that much. And that's the right way to, you know, that's a bit of common sense.
But, you know, speaking of someone who's a few years away from retirement, I know lots of people who are retired and have way more disposable income now than they did when they were working. So why should they get an automatic discount?
Yeah.
Because they hit a certain age. Shouldn't it be like a means test, like, you know,
no.
How much are you bringing in, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we got a lot of people, Jonathan, by... I not mention now who they are in Torbay or St. John's or anywhere else. But they're only on social services, some of them poor people. Try to send their people to school and their youngsters to school. And
Well, there's a lot of people on social services who aren't seniors.
Yeah.
And should they get a discount as well, besides the fact that they're on social services?
Yeah. And some of them do.
Which is money that's provided to them by the rest of us, quote-unquote. You know, that's society looking after their own.
Yeah.
I would agree with the point that it might not be enough for most to get by. As the cost of living goes up, as seemingly the supplemental income does not. I don't know. That's certainly a debate that we can continue to have, and I appreciate you bringing it up. By the way, Gene says dogberry abundance is a reflection of the previous summer's weather. It's not a telltale sign for the coming winter. Now, I'm not sure if Gene Blunden writes the Farmer's Almanac or not, but I can tell you one thing. I don't.
But, John, this 25 cents if it comes up in October, you know what that is? That's an insult to the people. Yeah, that's an insult, John. It should be $15 and then or $17 because they got to stand on their legs all day long.
You have to find out what a living wage is versus a minimum wage. I agree
and,
with you, sir. Yep.
We'll soon get a nice big turkey now from Collins.
Looking forward to it.
I'll see you, John. You have a good night.
You too.
Yeah,
take care, Al.
I'm going to put on a dogberry beer. The dogberries are getting so ripe. Now I have mine to put on a big brew.
Somebody asked me the other day if you can make a beer out of dogberries. Can you?
Oh, yes, you can.
Yeah?
But it's a certain way of doing it. You got to put orange leaves, orange peels, apple peels, potatoes, and a certain way, the yeast cakes you got to buy. And a certain way you do it, and then let it go for about 7 or 8 days. Now, that should be put in a keg.
Okay.
A wooden keg.
Oh, yeah.
A little tap on it.
Well, that's expensive.
But some people put the dogberries in by itself. That's no good.
Okay. Yeah, then you just get dogberry. Blech.
Yeah, that's not good.
A dogberry wine
is a wood alcohol.
Oh, my goodness. So it's a hallucinogen.
There's people are dead today, drank that.
Well, thank you for the warning. And Al, I think you and I need to work on a cookbook. Cooking with Al from Torbay. What do you think?
Yeah.
All right.
Good enough, John.
Right.
You got a nice show going.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Bye-bye.
Al always comes in with some great recipes, and I thoroughly enjoy them. Everything tastes better with a little bit of butter. Al would be the first to say that, and I would agree. We're going to go to the break afterwards. We got somebody in the queue, and hopefully it's you.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Hi. Welcome back to the show. It's What is it? It's Election Eve.
Election Eve.
Yeah, it's also
my
Municipal
favorite
Mondays.
Time of year.
Happy Election Eve, by the way, Craig. I didn't get you anything.
Happy Election. No, I didn't get you. Well, I got you a coffee that I spilled in my car, so you got half a coffee.
Well, I gave
That's
you.
The traditional Election Eve gift is half a coffee.
Half a coffee?
Yeah.
Okay. And that way you can go to sleep early and dream of sugar plum electoral ballots. Right. Dave from the Goulds, online number one. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing okay, but my dog, Rosie, has gone missing.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Yeah, somebody... campaigning for somebody, I guess, opened the gate. There's a chain link fence, but they never closed the gate. And I let her out at 7 o'clock to do her nightly toileting. And she didn't come back 2 or 3 minutes later like she usually does with a loud bark, knowing that her supper awaits her. So she's gone missing. She's an older English setter, black and white, with her tail cropped off, and she's got a bit of an ear infection, too. She's a bit disoriented. And
How old is Rosie?
Oh, God, I don't know. I never ask a woman her age, but she's probably... I see the weather officer say she's probably 8 with gusts up to 12.
Well, let's think about this in terms of dog humor. How many times have you picked up Rosie's you-know-what? 1,000? 5,000? 10,000.
Oh, my God, I don't know. I usually put it in the lawnmower and share it with all around me.
I'm doing that this weekend.
Oh, my goodness. Listen, I hope Rosie gets back because it's dark out, and older dogs need to be inside when it's dark out. I got a senior dog myself. He's 12. And, you know, they can get disoriented. You're absolutely right,
sir.
Do
neighbors in the area know her? If they see her, will they know who she is?
I would say the immediate neighborhood knows her, but I live on Fourth Pond Road here, so I just like to put my phone number out there in case anybody sees her or finds
her.
Yes,
sir.
You know? We have 745-6052.
745-6052. If you see an English setter out in the Goulds, goes by the name of Rosie. Does she have a collar on, Dave?
She has a red collar on her, yeah, but I'm not sure if her tag is still on it or not, you know.
And okay. She's black and white.
She's a black and white setter, yeah. And I took her in about 7 years ago. She was getting ready to be put down then, you know, and I took her in. And
God love you.
I like to look after her, but my dog gone.
Oh, my. Well, listen, buddy, I hope you find Rosie. And do me a favor, would you call us back and let us know?
I certainly will, sir, and thanks for letting me get on your shoulder.
No problem. Are you anywhere near Bidgood's Plaza by any chance?
Yeah, just up the road from it, yeah.
Okay, I can't place Torcon Road in my mind's eye.
Fourth Pond.
Fourth Pond. Does Rosie like cheese?
Who doesn't like cheese?
I suppose.
Yeah, okay. I got a buddy up there who's got a little cheese factory. I'm going to see if he's up there bright and early making cheese, so maybe he can lure Rosie out. I know he's listening to the show. So, Adam, if you hear this...
Burn me out, too.
You're on the job. Okay. Thanks, Dave. And are you excited for the election tomorrow?
I was up till somebody came here campaigning and left my gate open.
Yeah, I hear you, bud.
I got Andy's sign on my lawn next to Wally there, so I'm not sure if that's what scared her off or what.
He's a big dog lover, though, isn't he?
He is. He's a huge dog lover, and he loves his dogs. Well, Dave, thank you for the call, and I'm glad that you did so, because tomorrow there's going to be a lot of people outside their houses going out to vote, so hopefully Rosie will be found.
A vote for Rosie is a vote for better dog government.
There you go.
There you go.
All right.
Thanks again, Jonathan.
Take care, sir.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There is a dog in the race, by the way. And I heard today from two people, we were talking about the election, and they both said, I would have voted for that damn dog if it was on the ballot, as opposed to any of the three mayoral candidates. And I laughed and laughed. I thought that was very, very funny. Before we go any further, here's a letter or an email from a listener, a regular listener, who says, yesterday in the newspaper, I found a poignant column which had been originally published years ago by columnist Ed Smith. The piece reflected on Newfoundland in Ed's youngest years and how it related to the maturation of the human beings who inhabit the province. And as always, it brought to mind a sense of loss through gaining a sense of adulthood. And it struck me, says the emailer, Ed Smith embodied the necessary optimism and goodwill that the people of Newfoundland truly need now more than ever. Without hope and without humor, what have we at all? Substance abuse, domestic abuse, and all other abuses that come along with that demon known as depression. We cannot afford to lose our youth to the ravages of depression. We have got to pass along our world-renowned humor to our children, and perhaps more importantly than anything, we have got to give our children hope for Newfoundland, and I suppose by extension Labrador, for his magnificent legacy and for his enduring optimism. I want to thank Mr. Ed Smith for having left us with the very gift we needed throughout his life. Thank you, Brenna. That was a lovely email. Greatly appreciate that, and it certainly warmed the cockles of my heart.
It's a great message on the eve of elections, you know.
It sure is.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And we've talked before about, you know, should your message be positive? Or, you know, when you run a campaign and all you're doing is tearing down your opponents, that sends a message to people in the community. And if you're running a campaign that talks about the future and possibilities, mm-hmm. that says something to people in the community.
It sure does. Well said. We're going to go to Cyril here on line number one. But before I do that, notice from the town of CBS, there's a coyote sighting in Lawrence Pond Road area. Residents are asked to report possible sightings to Provincial Wildlife Division 729-4180. True men don't kill coyotes. They call Wildlife Division. We're going to go to line number one. We're speaking with Cyril. Hi, Cyril.
Hello. How are you, Stephen?
Good. I just quoted the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I'm not sure if anyone got that reference.
I did.
Excellent.
No, I want to talk about, I don't know, is that the lack of candidates here in Port Jacobs and Phillips? They're hidden. They don't come out anymore. I've seen one candidate come to my door.
Wow.
Since all this started. And I've spoken to a lot of people, and they've all seen the same candidate, actually.
Really? So every other candidate is nowhere to be seen?
No, you know, unless you can make, could you have a... and meet the candidate night there 1 week or just a few weeks ago or something, which I was working, couldn't make it. Mm-hmm. And he had a night up to the Murray's Pond Club there.
Okay.
I got up there briefly. But you got to look them out. They're just laying pamphlets in stores and places. I expect you to pick them up and read them.
So nobody dropped any material off at your house or anything?
No,
or?
Just the one candidate.
Wow. I wonder, and I have no idea if this is what's going on, but... a lot of candidates are using social media now, Facebook pages and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Do you think they're assuming that everybody is picking up material that way?
Well, maybe. I have no idea because I don't have Facebook.
Well, there you go. So yeah, you're not getting it.
No, I had it for about 2 weeks when I first came out and it got on my nerves real quick.
I wish I did what you did.
Sorry, I'm snorting. That was really funny.
Oh, face page.
Yeah, no,
I'm really surprised to hear that because it's normally a pretty active municipality for municipal politics. So.
No, I've spoken to many people, especially around my area, mm-hmm. and they haven't seen anybody.
Hmm. I've only spoken to one. No, that's not true. I've spoken to two candidates in Port Cove, St. Phillips, who both said that they were campaigning door to door. So it's, of course, it's a question of being around. I've seen zero candidates at my door, and I'm home for the majority of the day, sir. But I do know that one candidate dropped by our house in Ward 2, and her sign is actually in our window. I didn't put it there because I'm remaining nonpartisan, but it's there.
I've dug out some candidates, but you got to go look for them.
Now, what do you do when you dig them out? Do you put them right underwater, or do you let their sprouts grow?
I'd like to put them under the water.
God.
Cyril, are you going to vote tomorrow?
Yeah, oh, definitely. But you see, I'm going down there, and I can't vote full slate because I can't vote for someone I didn't speak to.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I think, and I've spoken to a lot of people, too. They say, oh, I'm going to vote for Jane Doe. I say, why? Mm-hmm. I know her.
Yeah.
Those people should stay away from the polling booths, I think. If you don't follow the issues or talk to the candidates, you can't go in. I mean, mm-hmm. Jeffrey Dahmer's name could be on that list. They'll take it because it sounds like a nice name or something.
I've known people who vote alphabetically. You're right. Some people just choose names because they're pretty or they have the most syllables or the least number of syllables. You're right, Cyril. There's many reasons why democracy is a bit of a failure. That's certainly
no doubt.
A good example.
Well, what's the
alternative?
I'm going to screw up the quote, but yeah, it's better than the alternative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has the right to make a stupid vote.
I guess.
Unfortunately, that's sort of the way the system works.
I'm just disappointed in all our candidates, even the ones that's rerunning.
I know. I follow.
I've not seen them.
I follow several of them on Twitter. I follow hundreds of municipal people on Twitter. But I've seen them out, you know, shots of them out walking the streets in the rain and all that kind of jazz. So, you know, can't explain why they didn't get to your place. But it'd be interesting.
It's a lot of places. I speak.
Yeah, you were saying.
In my line of work, I speak to a lot of people every day.
And they're just not seeing people at the door. I'm the same as Jonathan. I can't say that a candidate didn't come by my house, but nobody came by while I was there. I several times I came home in the evening, and there was material, a pamphlet or something, in my mailbox. But I didn't speak to a single candidate at the door for Ward 1, for at-large, for whatever.
Cyril, we got to go. We're up against the news here, but really appreciate this. And as I said to you on email, I think that, you know, dropping the pamphlet to the brochures up to the corner store almost reminds me of the days when we used to have a town square, or wherever you go to your post office for the information on who's missing and where to pay your fees for this and that.
I picked up one pamphlet, and they don't even have a contact, an email, a phone number, nothing on the pamphlet.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
That is... Well,
one more thing before I go about that farmer's almanac.
Yes, sir.
With the dogberries and stuff, people have told me it's going to be a bad winter. The best technology in the world can predict 3 days down the road. Why are we going to get farmers to tell us what's going to happen 4 months down the road?
I think they actually have, you know, what are they called? Actuarial mathematicians who study weather patterns. But I don't know. That's a conversation I'd love to have with you on another night. But we got to go to the news now.
Okay.
Cyril, my buddy, thanks very much.
Okay.
We'll talk again. Bye-bye. You know, back in the day, they used to predict things by, what's the word, eviscerating a chicken? Cutting its open and throwing the guts out?
Yep.
Yeah, I tell you.
Tea leaves.
Yep. Whoa. We're going to go to the news.
You owe me a Coke.
I predict. We'll be right back.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
And welcome back to the program. We are joined here. There we go. My microphone's now plugged in. Welcome back to the program. We just had a microphone plugging session in here. The funny things that happen during news breaks. There you go. So it is Municipal Mondays. It is also Election Eve. Tomorrow is the day that the entire province will hopefully get out of bed and go vote. We're expecting a higher turnout than 50%, which is normally the target. Craig Pollitt, you're the CEO of Municipalities Newfoundland and Labrador. Am I misspeaking? What is the target?
I don't think we hit 50, to be honest.
Is it 40? And
I don't know off the top of my head what we've been getting. I've heard numbers in the 30s, the low 30s and high 20s in some places. But, you know, if we can get to 50%, that'd be great. It'd be great to see a lot more than that, obviously. But there's going to be a certain number of people who just can't make it because they're sick or they're out of town or whatever. You know, there's a little bit of... frictional loss there.
Part of the theory as to why a mail-in ballot would be useful.
Yeah.
It's because you have time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I'd like to talk about for the next hour, and we're joined right now with the head of the Essential Transit Association, Dr. David Brake. Dr. Brake, welcome.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
It's fabulous that you are here. We're sort of hoping to speak to a number of people, including yourself, of course, about what we want in terms of change and what we're looking for, and which councillors or mayors or deputy mayor candidates we should be focusing on for their policies as to how we're going to elevate our towns, our cities, our regions. And you are the head of the Essential Transit Association, as I've already said. And, of course, there are several issues that you would obviously be focused on, including the idea of public access in terms of transport. So, Dr. Brake, fill us in as to what your association does and what you would like to see improve. I've read some of your work. I know the answer to this, but perhaps our listeners do not.
Well, if any of you've tried to use the public transit system here in St. John's, you could probably make me a list as long as your arm of improvements that would be worthwhile to the service. I spoke to Andy Wells, and he gave me the strong impression that he felt that the service was there for people who had no other choice. And I am saddened to hear him say that, but I have to recognize the truth of it. My view is, and the statistics sadly bear that out, There was a survey done of users in 2011, and it found that slightly over half of them had an income under $25,000 a year, household income, mind, and slightly less than half of them had no car. So these are people who can't but use transit. I think we need to get to a transit system which gets past that, which gets, because one of the reasons why we have a transit system the state is in today mm-hmm. is because the broad range of citizens don't see it as for them. I'm not saying we need everyone to get rid of their cars, but I'd like to have a situation where we had a bus system people felt was really available and usable for them, not just because they couldn't but use it, but because it would be a useful service, a supplement to their cars, not a replacement for it. And people who wouldn't then need to think about having two cars in their households if they've got a family. People who are students here wouldn't feel they had to get a car to get in and out and around. And people who are getting older, and there are a fair number of them around the province, who maybe don't feel comfortable driving or maybe shouldn't be driving, wouldn't feel driven to keep driving their cars because they'd have a backup that they could count on.
I lived in two major metropolitan cities in Canada, Montreal and Toronto, where everybody uses public transit. You have, of course, light rail trains, you have the subway systems, and you have a comprehensive, highly efficient busing system that'll get you all across these regions, and sometimes from borough to borough or town to town. And they're shared. Some of them are private, the majority of them are public. That's where your tax dollars go. There are seniors and student discounts for bus passes, transit passes, and it's a very efficient and well-run system. To the best of my understanding, these systems work when you have a density of people, because you can avail of it that way. So is it the chicken before the egg, I guess, is what I'm asking. David Brake, do we need more people in order to have a greater or more accessible transit system? Or do we just change the mentality or the mind frame, as you're saying, encourage people to use public transit?
Well, there is an obvious chicken and egg thing. And we have a high rate of subsidy for it. It costs the taxpayers roughly $2 for every $1 that someone puts in on their fare box mm-hmm. to get to move people around. But that's not a reflection of the amount of usefulness that the system could have. People don't use it because it's barely there for mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. If people had the sense that they could count on it, and if, for example, they could wait in comfort for a bus instead of getting rained or snowed on as they wait, sure. We could see very significant improvements. If buses on the main routes ran more often than an hour outside of peak time, you'd get a couple more people coming off peak. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a telephone next to your...
I may have.
Okay, yes. There we go. All right. That's technology jumping into the conversation.
Please continue. So you do need to... you need to get the system to a place where people might consider it and let people know that that's the case. I think there's many, many years of people accepting this as being the state of it is and not hoping for this to get any better. In fact, I've been dismayed to see in the strategic plan that St. John's put together, the word transit doesn't appear. I mean, it appears in some of the longer form stuff, but it doesn't appear in the documentation about how they'd like to see St. John's going forward, except along to one side of it, if you like.
I'm going to ask you to just put your phone on airplane mode, or perhaps it's your computer, I'm not sure, that's interfering with... Oh, that's okay, and that's the world that we live in. We're on radio, but we're all connected to the internet. So, in fact, a lot of people are listening to this program on internet on our website vocm.com, and that's great because we have listeners all across the world. Believe it or not, yes, we've just killed all our phones, ladies and gentlemen. So they're probably, who knows? Maybe they're on the bus right now, or maybe they're in the subway because there are a lot of subways that do include Wi-Fi. It's all about convenience to have access to whatever you want, like you would. In your car.
I think that's one of the points that people lose touch with if they haven't used public transit or haven't used it very much is not only is it a potential cost saving, but it's actually when the buses are full of people, or obviously not when they're packed, but you know, when you've got a bus system that you feel comfortable in, you can actually sit down, do some work or make some calls and just feel like you can spend the time more productively than sitting in your car. Sure. And when the weather is crappy, it's much less stressful to let the trained bus driver take the strain rather than having to do it yourself.
It's a mobile office. I crammed for many an exam on the early morning metro over to my SageUp, and you can do it because you have the comfort of a warm seat, and sometimes your friends will be with you, and you could talk, and you might not necessarily be able to do that if you're in a traffic jam, for example, because you're dodging other cars, etc. So here's an interesting idea, and I always think of this. There's been some pilot projects. There was a metro bus was going into Paradise, and I think Portugal Cove St. Philip's had one for maybe a few months. Craig Paul, refresh my memory if I'm wrong.
And the airport has a route now, I think.
Has a route, which was lobbied against by some interest groups. Why would it not be incumbent upon candidates for Portugal Cove St. Philip's and Bell Island to campaign for a commute? Imagine, first and foremost, carpooling. Mm-hmm. The fact that carpooling does not exist in this province, I think, is incredibly tragic. It is very tragic because the cost of gas being what it is, I don't see why this isn't a viable option, especially if you're all coming off a bloody ferry together. Why don't you reduce congestion that way? No doubt half of you are going to the same place to go to work regardless. So to have public transit in certain hubs, it's not just the shopping malls that would be the hubs, it would be other areas. Dr. Brake, what would be your suggestions or what are your observations in terms of which municipalities are actually looking at transit as a viable alternative?
Well, I haven't been around the mall. I have to say Paradise still has a bus service of sorts, but it runs four times a day during weekdays, as I recall. Mount Pearl has a bit more, not very much, but those are the two municipalities outside of St. John's I'm aware have any kind of metro bus connection at all. If you're not in those two, you're out of luck. And I know that there was an attempt made as a sort of demonstration to run a link up to Bell Island, but I'm not sure anything came of it. What we're as an association are suggesting there needs to be some form of regionalized transit, no question. But we don't know yet the basics, which is what are the potential traffic, what are the traffic flows and people flows into and out of the city in some detail. So the first step, rather than relying on the individual initiative of councillors or mayors in these other municipalities, is that the region get together and fund a proper study centered not just around vehicle flows, but around potential person flows and people's willingness to take transit and so on, to see what would make sense to fund as a service. And then at that point, all the municipalities together could go cap in hand to the province and maybe make a suggestion. But relying on individual mayors and individual councillors in the surrounding municipalities to have the initiative to do it individually means you get a piecemeal and not necessarily very effective joined up system.
Yeah, because whoever's running that system has to plan out 20 years how they're going to assign resources and all that sort of thing. So it would be difficult for them to, I'm sorry for jumping in there, but it would be difficult for them to say, okay, well, Paradise is the only one who asked, so we're going to work with them. Because 2 years from now, somebody else might ask, but you've already got your capital investment planned and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, you would absolutely have to have a plan up front. Or a study up front to say, who's going to use this and how? Where does it need to go?
Or sadly, equally, it could be that there's a very aggressive city wanting to have something done. And you say, well, it doesn't really stack up.
You put out a call for candidates here in the city of St. John's to back your 3.43-part plan to improve the service for Metrobus in our region. Who? How many or what percentage of candidates did you get that endorsed this? We have 37 running.
Well, in that case, just a little shade over half. Mm-hmm. But some very important people. We've got Danny Breen and Renee Sharp, mm-hmm. Both endorsed it absolutely. Even Andy Wells said that he liked some aspects of it. I think he was particularly keen to see the number of bus shelters doubled from, because fewer than one in 10 buses has a, fewer than one in 10 stops has a bus shelter at the moment. And also Sheila O'Leary mm-hmm. said that she was for it. Both of the candidates running in Ward 4 are for it. So I see that there are a fair number of incumbent councillors who I'm disappointed to say simply did not respond, or those who responded, some of them said, well, we really need to see the figures. We're not really sure until we get in as to whether we want to, whether we can proceed or not.
Okay. What kind of budget are you looking at, or an increase in budget to get this this three-part plan in place? For example, doubling the bus shelters. Is there a cost to that?
Yeah. I believe the bus shelter costs roughly $10,000. And yeah, I haven't costed that one out completely, but it's certainly that part would be less than $1 million.
Okay. And how much does advertising revenue? How much does Metrobus take in for advertising, for example?
I couldn't tell you.
If and you that, double the what I'm getting at is if you double the stops, you double your advertising potential, and this is a obvious to me idea for corporate sponsorship.
Oh yes, absolutely. And I think as well, and this is not really considered, I think, as much as they should do on things like Metrobus, which mm-hmm. is. Shelters are themselves an advertisement for the fact that there's a service that exists. You pass by a shelter and you realize, ah, there's a bus that runs along this line. I never realized. Or there's a bus stop that's near my house now. Ah, because you can very easily, if you're not looking for them, miss the small signs.
Yeah,
people who are regular users of the bus, they know where the bus shelter, where the bus stops are. But a shelter, you can have not just private advertising, but you can also have public safety announcements and City of St. John's events and all of that as well. So even if you don't necessarily sell all of the ads, you're still, it's still a valuable public service.
Sure.
If you've got a bench there, it's a rest for people who are walking too.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I've been stunned that that a remarkable number of the few shelters that do exist have no benches in them.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. There's a bus stop directly across from where I live that is close to a school, and whenever it rains, there is a small pond right in front of the bus shelter. And no, pardon me, the bus stop, aka the electricity pole.
The pole.
there is no shelter, and whoever is waiting for a bus there, and sometimes there are people, they get soaked,
mm-hmm.
and it is tragic.
I've also heard that many bus shelters don't get swept out in winter, so that even if you get to the bus shelter, you then have to clamber over mm-hmm. a big pile of snow to get onto your bus.
Right.
And not all, I think only about half of the buses that we have here are fully accessible. So mm-hmm. Disabled people are an obvious potential market. And yes, there is the Go Bus system. But going forward, while it's important to have a sort of safety net for people who are disabled and need to get around that gives them good their houses individually, there are a lot of people who are less disabled perhaps who could use a public transit system that was fully accessible, where you could shelter in your wheelchair, you can get onto all of the buses on all the routes.
Mm-hmm.
There's movement towards that. Some federal funding has gone towards that, but more needs to be done. And incidentally, federal funding is what makes this, to my mind, a really urgent thing to strike while the iron is hot on, because the feds, bless them, have a pot of money dedicated for transit infrastructure.
That's right.
All we need to do, we stump up a buck, they'll stump up a buck, and we can get some of those improvements, but only while the program's going and while the interest is hot.
Fascinating.
Another administration might have a different point of view.
Yeah, it's like the infrastructure enhancements. We're going to go right now to the chair of the Canadian Federation of Students, Newfoundland Labrador, Sophia Descalzi. And, we're going to take a break first. Thank you very much. I just noticed that we're over time. So, Sophia, you hold on. We'll be right back.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Hi there, welcome back. It's Municipal Mondays. It is election eve. We're joined in studio with the CEO of Municipalities Newfoundland and Labrador, Craig Pollitt. We also have the head of the Essential Transit Association, Dr. David Brake, with us. And currently on line number one, we have the chair of the Canadian Federation of Students Newfoundland and Labrador, Sophia Descalzi. Hi, Sophia. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, Jensen. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight. It's the eve of the election. You and I have discussed here in the studio at VOCM Nightline the idea that there are many students out there who can't vote because, well, they either get here too early to be here for 30 days before the...
too late.
It's too late. Yes, thank you very much for finishing my sentence. Or, because I clearly couldn't. or there are other issues, such as that they're not residents of this country or province. Sophia, what's the buzz? How's it going at the university?
We have been doing a lot of work around making sure that students go out to vote tomorrow or have sent their mail-in ballot. But we have to recognize that a student burnout for a student turnout is going to be low once again. We already see the numbers. And for that, within our Students Build Communities campaigns that we have developed, we have created a pledge to make sure that candidates are on board with making these positive changes to increase accessibility for students to vote. And with that, yes, amending the Municipal Act to have election day on a later date, as well as making non-citizen residents eligible to vote, as well as creating a central polling station at a month, because you have to meet students where they at. You have to make sure that you cater to the needs that they have in order to make sure that they are going to the polling stations and making their voice heard. And we are also asking for the city to have a post-secondary education student on committees that are very relevant to student issues, like the Metrobus committee, which will definitely benefit from having that voice around the table.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because it's one thing to have governments go out and consult before elections. I'm talking provincial here. Or it's another to have municipal councils to pay for consultants to tell us how to shovel snow off of sidewalks. It's another to hear from the people who are actually affected on a day-to-day basis. You say that some students can't get down to City Hall to register to vote or just might not have the time because they're studying or whatever. So until we get to the time where you can vote on your iPhone or Android device, which will probably come soon, or, you know, a wristwatch, yes, we do need to look at issues of accessibility. Excellent points tonight, Sophia. I'm just going to ask my guests if they have any counterpoints or follow-ups for you, because I have a couple of very big brains in the room here. So, Craig Pollitt, let's start with you, and then we'll go to David Brake.
Where are you hiding the brains?
Coffee. It's in the coffee cup.
In the coffee. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, we met with Sophia prior to the elections starting and have been working with them. But the point she makes about the date of the election is a really interesting one, because I was having a discussion with somebody earlier today. That there's also an issue in terms of, you know, people coming back from vacations and that sort of thing. You know, people who are no longer students, who are working, right, and might be gone for Labor Day and really don't get back into the swing of things until, you know, first or second week of September. And kids are, you know, people with families, their kids are going back to school, and there's a lot to distract you from what's happening in the municipal election. And all of a sudden, third week of September, boom, there's an election. Have you had time to actually digest what's going on? And luckily, we are fairly soon, I think, going to be going into a period of review of a bunch of the municipal acts, the Municipalities Acts, the Three Cities Acts, and the Municipal Elections Acts, quite probably. So there's a really great opportunity now, which doesn't come along every day, to rethink a bunch of this stuff, how elections happen, how they're run, all that sort of thing could be put on the table. So the timing, unfortunately, it's not in time for this election, but the timing is excellent in terms of raising it as an issue.
Good point. Dr. David Brake, any comments?
Well, considering how long it seems to take to get major changes like that done, if we're lucky, we might be ready for the election following.
For the next one.
But I think that's absolutely right. And one of the things that I've observed is just how short a window there seems to be to talk about the issues in this election. It's not very long. And unfortunately, I'm really not sure that most of the candidates have taken much advantage of that, even the short time they've had. I haven't seen a huge buzz of excitement around particular issues that that people should be talking about, like transit. Mm-hmm. There just hasn't been the opportunity to hear the candidates very often.
Yeah, I'll be honest, there certainly has not been as many forums as I would have expected, and I think there were more forums last municipal election cycle, at least that I can recall. I remember attending a great one at the Bruno Center at Memorial. It was a lot of fun. We're going to ask Sophia about the rides being provided to polling stations. Sophia, are there rides?
Yes, mm-hmm. They are at actually Happy City St. John's. If you just type in happycity.ca, they have the locations and schedules for our rides.
Oh, cool.
I am aware that the university student union there is also going to provide rides in St. John's. Mm-hmm. If you're in Corner Brook, we will also be providing rides from Grenfell every half an hour to the polling stations as well. So make sure you also get in contact with the student union there as well. And I just want to quickly add up to the conversation that issues like we are talking about accessibility of voter and student issues, just like public transport, shouldn't only be talked during election time. It should be ongoing discussions
yeah.
that should be touched throughout the entire period of this specific city. So let's keep these conversations going. Let's not end just tomorrow, but work towards a better community and a better cities for our province.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for those inspiring words, Sophia. So happycity.ca is where you can find all the election info. Also, of course, at stjohnsvotes.ca. Thank you, and I look forward to our next conversation, Sophia.
Me too. Have a great night.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Chair of Canadian Federation of Students Newfoundland Labrador, Sophia Descalzi. We're going to end this segment with a conversation with former mayor of Paradise, Mr. Fred Brown. How are you tonight?
Not too bad, Jonathan. And I like your guest. I like to comment on the Metro bus. You got a guy there at the end of when I finished there.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to you on September the 20th and read the last meeting of council here in Paradise. They promoted the acting CAO to CAO, and you said you had received an email about the job posting. And there was a job posting. There was 48 people applied. Mm-hmm. There were six interviewed. And it was done, the interviews were done by two counselors and one person from Human Resources,
right,
who reports, by the way, to that CAO, which to me is not independent.
Yeah, I didn't receive an email, just to clarify. What I did was I read a tweet out on the air while you and I had a conversation, which provided the information that you just repeated.
Yeah, and I know who the tweet was from. But anyway, it wasn't independent. This was all done in-house. And from what I can gather to some of the people that were interviewed, mm-hmm. it was a foregone conclusion that the acting CIO was going to be the CIO, and was all done in-house. One of those people on the panel was from the one of the senior management people who report to that acting CIO. Now, Craig Powell is there, and like, I think M&L should be looking at this stuff, you know?
Okay, let's have Craig comment on that. If you don't mind.
Well, every municipality has a right to decide how they want to do their hiring. Whether that person feels that the CAO, I mean, if that person, the HR director, whoever it was, decides that they don't want that acting CAO as CAO, then that person won't be the CAO.
But Craig,
so no,
this is not independent. This was done in-house. Shouldn't that be independent from some people from the outside look at the other applications as opposed to just the acting CAO being promoted all in the last meeting of a council before an election?
No, it doesn't have to be. I mean, the idea that it's independent, like I'm assuming what you're talking about is hiring a firm or something to come in and
sure,
do the analysis. But they still leave the decision up to council. You can hire an HR firm. They can come in and do the analysis and say,
yeah,
here's our analysis. But they don't make the decision. They would make a recommendation.
Yeah,
but it's still up to council to make that decision.
Based on the qualifications that was posted, in my opinion, and probably some of the opinion of the people that applied, the acting CEO was really not qualified. There was people applied in the interview was more qualified than the person they promoted.
According to you.
According to me.
And according to other people. But anyway, let's move on. I'm saying that the other thing, the new council coming in...
Just to inform you, we have 60 seconds before we're taking our next break. Fred?
Okay, well, what I'm saying is the new council coming in could post a job again, ask that CIO to apply, and then have an independent people do the interview and determine who's best qualified, right?
Sure.
So to get to you, Mitch, well, I wanted to comment on the $63 million under this BCF fund, which is the Building Canada fund.
We are pressed for time, but please.
Well, there's one item there, which was a new town hall for $22.9 million, and there was a couple of other big items. So most people around the town are wondering why they need a new town hall. And on Metrobus, your gentleman there said the Metrobus is coming to paradise. Mm-hmm. And it's a waste of taxpayers' money. We had a couple of people that was riding the bus. There's only around 10 or 12 people riding the bus. It's going in and out of paradise empty. And it was costing the taxpayers of Paradise around approximately $300,000 a year. The only people who's benefiting from this is the City of St. John's, who's helping to the taxpayers of Paradise, who's helping reduce the deficit of Metrobus in St. John's. So
very good. I'll have Dr. David Brake respond to that after the break, but we do have to go. And thank you. I did read your letter that you posted in the paper, and I did... take a great interest at that point. So we'll let Dr. Brake comment on that after the break. Fred Brown, thanks for your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye. All right. After the break, we will be right back to discuss that issue in particular.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Welcome back to the show. We have a very short period of time. I just learned there's an actual conference here on transit that's happening right now, Dr. David Brake.
Yeah, that's right. There's a national conference. I want to say the CCA or something. They're meeting right now in the convention center, and they're talking transit issues.
Amazing.
I hope that that some representatives from Metrobus are down there learning some lessons.
And hopefully they can call us tomorrow or the next day and we'll find out. Dr. Brake, I'd like you to respond to Fred Brown's comments about nobody riding the bus in Paradise. Then we're going to go to Todd, who has a suggestion for bus shelters. We're going to finish the show with the chair of Common Front NL, Elise Stewart. So let's start off in Paradise by the dashboard
well,
lights.
I would love for the buses running in down there to be full, obviously, but it doesn't surprise me over much that they're empty. This is a pilot to see how it might work, but I don't suppose many people in Paradise know that the bus service exists or would expect there to be a bus service. Mm-hmm. And the service being four buses a day, two peak going out, two peak coming back. If you don't happen to be going into work at exactly the right time and coming back at exactly the right time, that bus is of no relevance to you. Mm-hmm. So, if there were a link that you could trust that ran acceptably rapidly, you might find it more interesting than come to it. But yeah, I mean, you don't want to spend transit money for nothing. That's why one of the things that we're calling for is a proper proper study to be made of where the potential for better transit really exists in terms of people's needs and wants. But making people know and feel that there's a bus service that they can now depend on and look to is just as important as providing the service itself.
Good point. Thank you very much for that. We're going to go talk about bus shelters with Todd on line one. Hello, Todd.
Good evening.
How are you?
Good. Just listening about the transit stuff. I thought about this for years. I don't ride the bus myself, but mm-hmm. I see people stood at the bus stops, like elderly people with a cane and stuff with groceries. And most of the bus stops that are around, I can understand not having a bench in the shelters, because you know what would happen. People would be sleeping in the shelters, and that's understandable. But the main bus stops that are around town, like, say, down on Gower Street or probably up by the university, somewhere like that, I mean, or whatever, even by supermarkets or stuff like that, if you had a little seat that's sort of like the size of a big frying pan that was probably galvanized or something like that, that sort of, they'd fold it down. Like, I mean, obviously, if the pole that would occur, you wouldn't put the seat on that side. You put it on the other side of the pole. So when you got up, it folded up. Because the average chair in the kitchen, your regular kitchen chair is 18 inches high. So if you had a little seat that was only the size of a big frying pan, so like an elderly person could sit down and wait for the bus at that bus stop.
Sure.
99% of the time, there's usually only one person at that bus stop at a time. So, I mean, you don't even want one there. So at least they'd be able to sit down and wait for the bus. Like, and then when they got up, it would fold up.
Love it.
It was only 18 inches high, and it wouldn't cost a lot of money. I mean, you wouldn't have to put them on every bus stop. Just put them on the bus stops that are, and I mean, they know who picks up where, how many people are at certain bus stops and what's used the most,
sure,
and which ones are not. So, I mean, they could do a survey and see which ones they would put them at. And it was only a suggestion. I don't say that would happen. But, I mean, at least then the elderly people, or even myself, be able to sit down and wait for the bus.
Yeah.
While you're waiting for the bus.
Rumble seats.
Right? Yeah, like a rumble seat, exactly. Right? Like in the old cars. But,
yes.
I mean, only the size of a large frying pan, you know, something less, you know, stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and regular chairs 18 inches high. And it'll be great for people who are waiting for the bus, especially elderly people, right?
Yes, and indeed.
It's only a suggestion.
I think it's a great suggestion. I always wondered why walkers can't also be seats. I was wondering, you know, like, for example, those who use walkers and might stand in front of a bus stop waiting for a bus, why can't walkers also be converted to a mobile chair?
They do. My mom's got one that's a walker, and
they'll
turn into a mobile chair. But, I mean, not everybody can get a walker with them. At least, that way you could actually sit. There's only a round, big frying pan. It's only to sit your little bum, man.
Love it.
And, right, and I mean, at least that way you can wait for the bus and something to sit on. But I can understand the shelters not having benches in them, because you know what would happen, like I said earlier, that people would be sleeping in them.
Yeah, right? Great points, Todd. So, thanks very much. Appreciate that.
It's a great, great program. You're doing a great job.
I really appreciate that. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye, Todd. Rumble seats. All right. I'm all about it. We'll continue that discussion right now with the chair of Common Front in Newfoundland and Labrador, Elise Stewart. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Very well. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. To
discuss a few issues about the municipal election, which is hours away.
It is. Election Eve, we're on here.
Happy Election Eve to you, Elise.
I'm right back at you.
Thank you. So we're joined in studio here with Dr. David Brake, and we've got Craig Pollitt. It's a full house, and we're grateful that you're joining us. And tell us some particular issues that you wish to address tonight as a representative of Common Front, and you have a lot of interesting brains in that building who basically discuss issues all the time. So what's the buzz?
That's what we're doing. So I think the main thing that the election time brings, whether it's a federal election or a provincial election or a municipal level, is that it's a time to think about where you want this province to go. Where do we see ourselves in the next 10 years, and what do we need to do to get there? So a lot of folks have talked about the importance of public transportation, quality public transportation, which is certainly essential. And, you know, we think that we're entering into a really tough time. You know, we've got a population that is projected to decrease dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
We saw with the recent Harris Center report. And we know that this population is aging, and we have an increase in unemployment rate. So those are some things that are working against us in many ways.
Right.
So all levels of government are going to have to come together, because everybody has a role to play. The municipal level, I mean, that's our most intimate form of government. Those are our roads. Those are, you know, our parks. It's all those things that really make life worth living in a lot of ways. So the municipal level has a big responsibility, I think, in the coming years to figure out, you know, how are we going to all get through this together, and what is that going to look like? So I really appreciate a lot of the points that your in-studio folks had, and some callers as well.
Yeah, we're not operating in a vacuum here. We do have we do have conversations and relations between all three levels of government,
but definitely. This
is an issue which comes up, I think, every election cycle, which is why don't we get along, or why aren't we able to get along?
Why can't we be friends?
Why can't we share the money that you have? I want what you got. You have a bigger sandwich, et cetera, et cetera. And how that goes, you know, that's, of course, an analogy to public policy pot of gold, where we can get things done, such as buying more bus shelters, having better snow blowers or heated sidewalks, or all the magical things on the wish list of making the city and others greater. You're right. So you're sitting in a room of entrepreneurs, Elise, and no doubt there are a lot of candidates listening right now who are wondering what other people have in their heads. In terms of solutions, do you care to share any tonight, or?
You know, I think the biggest ideas that we have moving forward is that we need to create, you know, a fair and sustainable economy. And to do that, it's not going to be easy. You know, there's a lot of I would say, potholes, to use a transportation pun here. There's a lot of potholes in our way of how we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but there's a lot of creative minds in this province. And, you know, we have a university, we have great post-secondary institutions that have a lot of those minds. And we'll keep fostering that and keep hoping that those folks stay here. I think that's the biggest thing, is getting folks to stay here. And so public transportation that is quality. I mean, every successful major city has a great public transportation system. I know you touched on when you lived in Montreal, most places, like, that's what you need. That's how folks have an engaging life. That's how they can engage in their community. So we certainly need to keep investing in those infrastructures.
I got a question here. Maybe you can answer this and maybe you can't. And David Brake, I'd like you to chime in here. Has Common Front met with the Essential Transit Association? Or are you aware of what Common Front is, David Brake? Because this might be an interesting place for you to visit. Elise, why don't you sell us on what Common Front is? Because Craig and I are converted, but I'm not sure that David Brake is aware of what your organization is.
Awesome. So Common Front is it's a broad-based coalition of labor, social justice, and community groups, and we represent over 100,000 Newfoundlanders and Labradorians. We have a large vision document that came out a couple years ago that we continue to draw from, and we continue to meet with folks in community and continue to figure out, you know, how are we going to get to where we all kind of want to be, where no Newfoundlander and Labradorian is left behind. So that's what we're doing. Transportation is certainly going to be part of that. We haven't met officially, but what better time than on air before the election?
David, any comments?
Oh, I think we're both singing from very much the same hymn sheet, and it's a small city. I'm sure we'll be bumping into each other before very long. But the Essential
Hopefully
Transit Association's
shelters.
Really been I'll be lying there dozing on my local bench. Yes. I just wanted to remind people that if they want to find out which councillors seem to be paying attention to the issues around transit and back our three-point plan, if you go to Facebook and look for Essential Transit Association, there's a list, also on Twitter. So
I'm doing that right now.
Please pay attention, and when you're casting your vote, it's only one of the issues, but hey, it's an important
one. It's a big one.
Yeah, and I like to think that the same guys who are backing transit are probably backing a bunch of other things that you want to be paying attention to, too.
Elise, I don't have to ask you if you voted, but are you excited about tomorrow?
I'm waiting with bated breath. I'm excited and very nervous at the same time. So it's going to be my first City of St. John's election, and one for the books, I'm sure.
You need to go to like an election results party or something.
Organize
one.
Well, I mean, Craig, are you suggesting? I mean, is it your house or what?
I'm actually tied up, unfortunately. If I wasn't already engaged, I would totally be offering up my kitchen. kitchen and my AM radio.
Absolutely. There are at least one or two that are going on around. I think Sheila O'Leary's got one going, and there are probably others too.
I always found in my university days that Bitters Pub was a great spot to watch elections. You get more people there as opposed to a Hockey Night in Canada event, right? Because it's full of nerds like ourselves watching this unroll. Thank you very much for your time, Elise. We are out of it, however, so we're going to have to say goodnight now. Good luck on election eve. And
thanks so much.
Call us once the results are in. I'd love to hear your perspective.
Thanks. Bye.
Good night. Bye-bye. You can find on the Essential Transit Association's Facebook page those who did back the transit pledge. There's quite an extensive list, as well as those who provided partial support. That's interesting. Also like to invite you back into the studio, David Brake. I just see here that you wrote a book called Sharing Our Lives Online, The Risks and Exposures in Social Media. That topic terrifies me. So maybe
yes,
we can...
Yes, absolutely. I'll swap hats very happily for you.
Good. We're all a bit of hat swappers here, aren't we? Thank you for coming in. It's, as you can see, relatively painless to be here. So hopefully you'll be here again. And Craig Pollitt, happy election eve to all of you. There
Thank
is a moose
you.
Sighting in Pooch Cove at Kelly's Pit right on top of the hill. And don't forget, there is a dog missing, Rosie, in the Ghouls. So if you see Rosie, there is a number that you can call. I'm going to look for that again because we don't want to have that dog lost. 745-6052. Call Dave if you see the English setter, black and white, named Rosie. Call the province if you see the moose in Pooch Cove. Drive carefully. Hopefully you all cast your ballot tomorrow, and let's talk about it tomorrow night with live coverage with our news director Linda Swain and her fabulous news team right here on VOCM. Good night to all of you. As we say in Hebrew, Laila Tov.